Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Okay, before we start, look. Basketball is about to begin, and here at Locked On Heat, we are looking for advertising partners for the upcoming season. If you or your business wants to try something new and take advantage of advertising with a personal touch, Locked On Heat is looking for sponsors as passionate about the Heat as our thousands of listeners. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with companies than from any other form of media. Our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so you get the most bang for your buck. To find out more information, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Okay, with the business stuff out of the way, on with the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We're going to do kind of a whole podcast based on hypotheticals, because you guys know how David and I love hypotheticals. We both wrote for The Step Back last week a piece for their Butterfly Effect series. David wrote about what would have happened if Ray Allen had missed the famous Game 6 shot in 2013, right? And then I wrote about what if LeBron had stayed in Miami in 2014, that summer, when he actually left to go to Cleveland. And we went down those individual paths and kind of determined what would happen from there. Just our best guess, right? So Let's just start with the Ray Allen one, because to me, that is a huge what if, right? That is the biggest shot in NBA history. It could have gone wrong in so many ways. He could have stepped out of bounds. He could have had his toe on the line. Like, there's so many. Just the fact that he made that was just incredible. Never mind the fact that Bosch got the rebound somehow. Obviously an incredible shot, but you wrote about it, David. What to you stood out about that Game 6 shot and how things could have just been different, say Ray Allen didn't make it?
Well, I mean, you know, in keeping with the whole theme of the week, and for our listeners, you should definitely go to The Step Back, see some of that great writing. This is Heat-centric, my piece, Wes's piece, both Heat-centric, but there are some other great ones. And going through this exercise, one of the things that stands out is, you know, we discuss hypotheticals on this show all the time, but we never consider, you know, in keeping with the name of this, of the butterfly effect, you know, one thing can lead to a cascade of other ensuing changes. Some of them could be huge. Some of them could be much smaller. But when it comes to Ray Allen, the way you and I have always seen it historically was that it was a monumental shot. Like, not only did he make that shot, fine. He makes it in reality. They go on to win in overtime. Miami does, of course. And then they go on to win Game 7. They celebrate their second straight championship, et cetera. And everything goes on the way it does as time flows normally. But in this case, Ray Allen misses that shot. All of a sudden, if you can go back to 2013, you remember the kind of monumental pressure that Miami had been in. You know, some of that had been kind of lapsed a little bit or released following LeBron, you know, competing in the Olympics in 2012. I think he started to win a lot of favoritism back. You know, he was gaining popularity, some of the popularity he lost following the decision in 2010. I think Miami had won that championship in 2012 against Oklahoma City. So again, they were seen as kind of like riding the ship. But, you know, a year previously in 2011, so much had gone wrong. So much of the country, perhaps even the world, was opposed to Miami winning that championship because of the vitriol that kind of flowed from the decision in 2010. They were the villain, and you know, Dallas was the heroic team of a group of individuals that had bonded together to form a much better cohesive unit, et cetera. And Miami was seen as this kind of collection of mercenaries that had taken a lot of money. And although there was much more talent in Miami, at least top-heavy talent, Dallas was seen as a much more cohesive unit. And that was one of those narratives that really, you know, was appalling and disturbing to me, you know, because so many people had overlooked how much money guys like James and Wade and Bosch had sacrificed. Udonis Haslam took less money to be brought back. So whatever, that's a whole other story. But for Ray Allen, he misses that shot. They go on to lose. All of a sudden, LeBron James and the Heat in the Big Three era are 1-2 in the finals. Not nearly good enough. And you start to hear a lot of that criticism. And remember what happened in the following year, even after the buzz of an incredible championship in 2013, that team struggled so much. Dwayne Wade was struggling with his health. That team was kind of kept together by James's really his singular talents. He was carrying so much more of the workload in 2013-14. Would he have been comfortable doing that, knowing that the end result would probably have been another loss in the finals? There was so much there to kind of break down, you know. For the Spurs, you know, there was also that perspective that they went on in 2013-14 and formed one of the most cohesive units, to be honest with you. They changed, I think, the game in a lot of ways, and that they initiated this offense that was so pass-centric, so effective at finding open shots, knocking down three-pointers. And then from that point, it kind of snowballed into the next version of that, which was the Atlanta Hawks team that was, you know, the 60-win team. Hawks, you know, again, forming a really cohesive unit with guys that weren't considered superstars, Paul Millsap, Al Horford, Kyle Korver. And then that kind of flowed a little bit into Golden State as well, you know, the small ball revolution and everything else. And even going a step back further, you know, for Miami, you know, all of a sudden there you are in 2013. We know that Pat Riley was never quite on board with the you know, change to small ball. It was very effective in 2012 and 13, but after losing, you know, twice in three consecutive, you know, finals, would he have made an issue of it with Spoelstra and perhaps said, you know what, it's time to abandon this small ball? And for a guy like Riley, who had Pat Ewing, Alonzo Mourning, Shaquille O'Neal, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, would he have gone where a more traditional center?
Well, that's the most fascinating thing to me, because you, as you write in your piece, does he trade Chris Bosh at this point? Because if they lose two out of three finals, and the one that they would have won would have been against this baby Thunder team, right?
Right.
Which you could look back in hindsight. At the time, I think the Thunder were predicted to win by a lot of pundits. I don't know if they were necessarily favored by Vegas, but I remember that a lot of people had them winning those finals because of all the talent that they had. With Durant, right. Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka, James Harden was still on the team then. But if Miami's only, if the Big Three's only championship would have been against this 22-year-old Thunder squad, right?
Right.
Then, and they would have lost to this undermatched Dallas Mavericks team, and then a much more cohesive veteran group in San Antonio. You could argue that the Big Three was a failure, even though they won one championship. And then, like you said, does Pat Riley at that point say, the small ball thing's not working, we need to go more traditional, we need a true center? Does he trade Chris Bosh and then go out? And I think you mentioned Dwight Howard in your piece, right? He was a free agent.
Yeah, Dwight Howard, Andrew Bynum, Chris Paul, those were some of the big-name free agents in 2013. I mean, obviously the Chris Paul one isn't the traditional center, but maybe he says, he kind of shifts a little bit, says instead of a traditional center, he could just have any kind of 7-foot stiff. Maybe go back to what it was a couple of years ago where you have, you know, Eric Dampier in there or somebody along those lines, right? You know, and we forget that Bynum at the time was one of the better centers in the league. You know, he had the size, he had some nice deft touch around the rim, et cetera. So, you know, that was before the transition. And part of the reason the transition took place, as we've talked about a number of times, is because Chris Bosh showed how versatile a team could be. You could force the defense out even further. You had the flying death machine that was attacking people beyond the perimeter. You could trap without an elite level rim protector. And so that changed the game. And then having a guy who could create offense the way he did from the perimeter, he could pass from the high post, mm-hmm. he could spot up from three or even in the mid range. It just, things opened up so much more substantially. But perhaps if all of a sudden, you know, Bosh was seen as the weakest link because, one, LeBron James is LeBron James, Dwayne Wade because of the connection to his team, it's harder to think. And I did theorize whether or not maybe knowing that Dwayne Wade's health was dwindling, would Pat Riley have been willing perhaps to trade Wade in 2013 instead? I mean, maybe he shifts allegiances a little bit and says, you know what, I still can build a superstar-heavy team, but instead of having Dwayne as the focal point, you know, from the fan perspective, it's going to be a LeBron-centric team. And we'll acquire whomever we have to. Maybe you can trade Dwayne Wade in 2013 along with Chris Bosh, maybe, you know, obviously to different teams, but you rebuild completely knowing you have to salvage whatever time you have with LeBron and the team. And maybe you do something like what Cleveland has done in the years since, you know, where you try to acquire guys like Kevin Love, et cetera. So it's a very interesting step. And, you know, you kind of look at how everything can change from that one shot.
And the whole, right, Bosch getting that rebound, kicking out to Ray Allen, winning that championship in one of the greatest finals series ever played, right?
Right.
That also heavily influenced what the Warriors do with small ball, with Draymond Green, et cetera, and stuff. So if that, for a lack of a better word, let's call it an experiment in Miami, right? The small ball experiment in Miami doesn't work as well as it did in reality. Are the Warriors, is Steve Kerr broadcasting and watching this, you know, from the sidelines, is he as enthused about bringing small ball to the NBA? He might be, right? He was part of those Phoenix Suns groups and everything like that. He might still be, but he might not have the blueprint or the template to follow like they did with Bosch. And on the same side of that, are the Spurs as motivated in 2014?
Right.
If they would have won in 2013, does Tim Duncan retire? Does Manu retire?
Right.
I mean, do any of these other events take place where I think there's a lot of logic in if Ray Allen misses that shot and the Spurs win in six games, we knew that their primary motivation, that in 2014, when they just obliterated the Heat in the finals, was to make up for that loss. They did not feel like Ray Allen's shot should have gone in. They felt like they let that game get away. And in a lot of ways, they did.
They did, absolutely.
And the chances of Ray Allen making that shot, I don't know, he makes it 3 out of 10 times, right? 4 out of 10 times,
Yeah, exactly. You know, his career average was just around 40%. So, when you look at it from, that's great. But right. 6 out of every 10 opportunities from beyond the line is going to be a miss.
So if the Spurs don't come out and dominate the way they did in 2014, the second seed in the West that year was the Oklahoma City Thunder. Do they come out that next year a little bit older? Do they come out and win or go to the finals, maybe win the finals in 2014? Do they win the finals of 2014 because Ray Allen missed that shot, the Spurs won in 2013? So they're not as the Spurs aren't as motivated in 2014. The Heat, absolutely, they make a bunch of changes. They don't get to the finals the next year because they're in a year transition, possibly. Just again, we're just making things up. We're guessing. The Thunder go on and win the championship. Does Kevin Durant ever leave? He's won a championship in Oklahoma City. Does he ever go to the Warriors now? I mean, there's so many things that had to happen just for the Warriors to be the Warriors that they are today. That is the definition of the butterfly effect, right? One thing, one shot misses, and the Warriors may have never gotten Kevin Durant. Right, Ray Allen misses a shot in Game 6 of the Finals against the Spurs, and that affects several other teams that weren't even involved in that series. Right, it's crazy.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's always interesting to look at the past. But for me, one of the things I like looking forward to is the future, and the future of ordering tickets is SeatGeek.com.
That's right, because they've gotten rid of the traditional method of going online, and we're going to call that traditional for lack of a better term, going online, opening up 1,000 browser tabs and trying to find the best ticket, just hoping that you didn't forget to look at one site or just praying that you're not getting screwed because you just don't know the difference. SeatGeek knows the difference. SeatGeek makes it easy for you because buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to the live events that you want to see. Their seamless mobile experience helps you buy tickets and sell tickets with just 2 taps. They'll help you find the best seats at the best prices. Fully guaranteed. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way that I've ever found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere in just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. To get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off of their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LONBA, that's promo code LONBA, for $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase.
It's the small ball of ticket purchasing, our
country. It's just more efficient.
Absolutely.
At the rim or three-point line for them. Okay. So that was your butterfly effect.
Right. And you know, that's again, you know, as you were hinting at, one shot doesn't seem that monumental in that context. But when you look outside of that, as this piece forced us to do, you start to notice that not just one team or one game changes, but one team can change, individuals' careers can change. And perhaps in the case of like what Ray Allen's shot, maybe you start to impact styles of basketball right. that define the game today. You know, 4 years later, small ball is in effect. And, you know, it could have happened eventually, but it probably would not have happened if Allen misses that shot. But you went in a much narrower perspective, I think, with no less of a huge impact. And that's, you know, what if LeBron in 2014, things had gone, let's say Allen makes that shot. They go on to struggle in 2013-14. You know, obviously it was an emotionally trying year trying to piece everything together. But LeBron looks at his possibilities and says, you know what? I'm going to stay in Miami.
Right. I mean, a lot of people didn't think LeBron was going to leave in 2014, that summer.
We sure didn't.
And it's a Heat team that went to four straight finals. Yeah, they got destroyed by the Spurs, but they beat the Spurs 2 years before. Maybe if we knew that the Spurs came out angry, it was one of the best basketball teams we've ever seen. We knew that the Heat were tired. They make a few changes, they tweak a couple things, and they're right back, right? After all, they have LeBron James. So right. A lot of people didn't think he would leave. He did. He went back to Cleveland. But what if he didn't, right? That there's always that thought. I mean, Heat fans think about this all the time, I'm sure. What if LeBron never left? So I looked at it, and I still determined that either way, LeBron would have left. Which is
it's just because it's one of the things that I talked about, and you certainly get into it as well. Is that you know so much of what these players do as individuals is about their lasting legacy, and a lot of that right now in today's league, from fans in particular, is defined by championships. And for a guy like LeBron James, who is without a doubt one of the top players in NBA history, a lot of the argument in favor of viewing him how high up that scale he is based on his championship success. And at this point, he's 3-4. Am I right? He's 3-4 in the NBA finals because he missed in 2007, missed in 2011, and then he won in 12, 13, and then 15. So he's 3-4 in the NBA finals. And he has to pull down the ring. Look, Kevin Durant's legacy is assured now as a championship winning player, regardless of how you feel about his move to Golden State. But, you know, for LeBron, if 2013-14 had gone the way it had, it would have still been very difficult because, you know, we talked about it. Dwayne Wade's health was a major issue that season and the following season as well. You know, Chris Bosh would have undergone his issues with blood clots in late 2015. In February of 2015 is when he had his first issue with blood clots. You know, you talked about the fact that if he had stayed, Cleveland would have pulled off the trade to acquire Kevin Love, a move they only made because they wanted to make their team a much more top-heavy, big three kind of unit, and so that's why they acquired Love. So you had theorized that Minnesota would actually have traded Kevin Love to Chicago
right.
in exchange for Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler.
Right.
So you also pointed out that, you know, Butler was destined to end up in Minnesota, but isn't that great how, like, you know, Butler turned into the player he was in Chicago, but maybe it would have happened in Minnesota instead, you know, and then Cleveland, conversely, somehow manages to keep pushing forward with Kyrie Irving, who probably would never have taken that superstar leap. Dion Waiters would have stayed there. They would have had no choice. They would have stayed invested in a guy who was a top five draft pick. They would have had Andrew Wiggins there and Anthony Bennett. Would they have continued on that path? I mean, so interesting how things change.
And when Riley, that remember the end of season press conference in 2014, he talked about the guts and everything like that. That was the highlight, guts. Right? Do you have any guts, blah, blah, blah. But what he was alluding to a lot of, look at what San Antonio did. Yes, they've lost finals, but they've also won a bunch of finals. That was the whole thing. That doesn't determine whether or not those guys stay or leave. They're going to stick together and they're going to make runs and they're going to give themselves a chance every single year. You're going to lose some, you're going to win some, but the idea is you give yourself a chance every year. If LeBron would have heard that and said, you know what, let's just be the Spurs. Let's just be the next Spurs. We don't necessarily have to play like them, but we're just going to stay together as a group and we're going to have a chance every year. Maybe we win, maybe we don't, but we're going to have a chance every single season. The Heat come back, they signed Danny Granger and Josh McRoberts before LeBron made his decision, right? So they would have been part of the team. So we would be looking at a lineup of of whoever the starting point guard would have been next year. Chalmers, Norris Cole, Shabazz Napier, because they were going to draft him.
But they did draft
Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Josh McRoberts, right? That's your starting five. So, and you've got guys like Granger coming off the bench. Battier retires. Maybe Ray Allen comes back for another year. He helped a little bit, but he was a little off his game in 2014 as well. The thing that kind of kept the Spurs going was drafting Kawhi Leonard or acquiring Kawhi Leonard on draft night. They traded George Hill, and they got Kawhi Leonard. And that's what helped them win and get to the finals in 2013, helped them win in 2014, is having that piece, that next guy to kind of take your franchise forward. That's the only way it would have worked in Miami. Even if LeBron had stayed in 2014, I think he would have left in 2015. Because LeBron said he liked Shabazz Napier, right? We all believe that the Heat drafted Napier because LeBron came out and said he liked him. So they're drafting Napier with the 20-something pick. And he doesn't work out either way. That doesn't work out. Are they able to make a midseason trade? Are they able to do something? We remember that year that they traded for Goran Dragic, right?
Right.
At the trade deadline. They probably don't make that trade. They don't trade Absolutely. Two first-round picks because they're not desperate. They're not below 500 like they were at the time of the Dragic trade. They're not desperate for that kind of player. I don't think they make a move to that extent.
Well, you don't,
but
yeah, you don't necessarily need such a high-level point guard when you have the ball primarily in James's hands. Or Wade's secondary.
Do they make a trade for Isaiah Thomas? Do they go for somebody else? I theorize that, look, the Celtics were rumored to be in the Dragic conversation before. The Heat offered two future first-rounders for Dragic. The Celtics settled for Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas ended up blowing up into an MVP candidate last season. We know how good Isaiah Thomas is now. That doesn't happen for Boston. That's a whole other thing that you could talk about in the butterfly effect. If they end up with Goran Dragic, who is a great point guard, a near all-star level point guard, we know that, but he's not Isaiah Thomas. He wouldn't do he wouldn't do what Isaiah Thomas did for that team. So that's a whole other route you can go with this, is just how does the East shape up? But Miami, they don't ever get the Kawhi Leonard guy, right? They never get that guy. They don't even get Justice Winslow the next year, because if we remember, in that next summer, they don't slip into the top 10, right? So their pick is owed elsewhere to Cleveland, I believe, that year. They end up keeping the 2016 pick, but I don't think LeBron sticks around because of the next summer in 2015. Because in 2014, they get to the finals probably anyway, because they have LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. But that was the year that Golden State took over the league. They would have lost to the Warriors. They would have lost two straight finals against superior teams, the Spurs and the Warriors. LeBron's gone. And if LeBron leaves, what?
They wouldn't have had Chris Bosh, though. You pointed out, though. That's when he had his first bout with blood clots.
Right, so he might not have even gotten to the finals.
He's lost in the second half of the season. Let's say Dwayne Wade's knees stay healthy for, you know, just enough to guide them in the playoffs or to help guide them in the playoffs. But it's basically a really poor team with James. Maybe Ray Allen plays a little bit more at shooting guard with Wade taking, you know, more breaks. Obviously, like you pointed out, no Goran Dragic. Chris Bosh is out. Does Danny Granger step up? Probably not. I mean, does Josh McRoberts somehow stay healthy and make
Sean Williams? Is he on the roster?
Yes, the Sean Williams era.
Neon Sean Williams.
Now, you suggest that they still would have acquired Hassan Whiteside. I'm still not so sure about
Well,
that.
Well, Bosh goes down, right? They had been scouting Whiteside. They had him in the D-League.
They did.
I don't...
They still had Chris Anderson.
They love to take chances on big seven-footers, right? They took a chance on Odin, Eddie Curry. Like, they may have taken a chance on Whiteside.
Maybe not from internally.
They worked him out during the Big Three era. It's not like he just fell into their lap, right? They had their eye on him.
But it's like we anticipate, you know, so much of this is for me anyway, I've always seen that it's always about fit. It's like we're talking about, like a lot of fans have mentioned to us, even I think in our mailbag, is like, oh, in 2015, we would have had Goran Dragic, we would have had Dwayne Wade, we would have had Chris Bosh, LeBron James, and Hassan. It's like, no. First of all, like you've pointed out, you wouldn't have traded for Goran because there would have been no need for him. And then Hassan wouldn't be the Hassan that we know today because he would have been the fourth wheel, the fifth wheel on this team. You know, he would have been a guy who has a lot to prove, and LeBron James, being LeBron James, isn't going to give everybody those chances to develop because he dominates as much as he does. He changes the way a team is run and plays.
He would have been more, He would have been more on Tristan Thompson's level, I think. Just a fine center. I don't think he would have ever developed his game to the level it is at now. But
right.
I think
how many touches would he have gone, realistically?
Not nearly as many. See, and I always thought, there's no way Whiteside's on this team if LeBron stays. But when I was kind of just diving into this thing, I think he would have made the team. I think he would have found minutes. But he wouldn't have been nearly, he would have never gotten the max deal. Like, he wouldn't have he wouldn't have been getting triple doubles. Like, none of this would have happened, right, for him. It would just, he would be an above average center in the league. Like, he would have had a spot on the team as the 7-footer who plays every once in a while.
Maybe like DeAndre Jordan, you know, with the X bar statistically.
Maybe that good. Yeah.
Right.
Maybe.
Like, maybe a 90% version of DeAndre, 80% version of DeAndre. Block shots. You know, because they would still been playing that elite level perimeter defense, they still would have funneled guy, theoretically towards the paint. And then Whiteside would have just concentrated on blocks, getting a couple rebounds. But then once he gets those rebounds, there's not going to be a lot of opportunities for him to put the ball up when LeBron's calling for it. And he's going to know his place on the team because, well, it's LeBron James and it's his team.
And even Whiteside, I don't think, just an average Whiteside. That wouldn't have been enough to keep him in Miami, because that wouldn't have been enough to either get to the finals or win the finals against the Warriors. Even let's give him the benefit of the doubt. LeBron James just always gets to the finals. They would have been destroyed by the Warriors that year, right? So
yeah, with Ray Allen covering Klay Thompson, that's not
exactly. So at that point, LeBron enters the summer. I can't win with this team. Dwayne Wade's breaking down. Chris Bosh, I have no idea what his future is. I gotta leave. Cleveland doesn't have the cap space. They're not in that situation that they were the year before. But they might have the cap space. But the other team here that has the cap space now all of a sudden is the Spurs, because the Spurs went out that year and they used their max cap room on LaMarcus Aldridge. Instead of Aldridge, maybe they get LeBron. LeBron has always had great respect for Greg Popovich. Popovich has always had great respect for LeBron. Does LeBron say, look, I could go to the West, I could beat the Warriors before they even get to the finals. Let me go to the San Antonio, I'll play with Duncan, I'll play with Kawhi Leonard, I could play with Tony Parker, I could play with Manu, I could just play in that system, I could be coached by Pop.
And I think that's where that legacy question comes in,
right?
You know, that would he have gone to Cleveland in 2014 without that second championship in 2013, which is where the Ray Allen shot comes into play. And chances are, no. Like, it's good to salvage your public perception, your Q rating, and all the impact that he talked about in 2014 about wanting to make a change in Northeast Ohio and be a force in the community. All good things, and things that he's certainly done, but things that he probably still could have done without actually being a player in Cleveland. And I think for him, personally, it would have been more about retaining and building a legacy that stands the test of time. And again, that's based on championships. So he could not have gone to Cleveland in 2014 or 2015, as you point out, because he still would have had to win at least another ring or two in order to make that move and seem like he's one of the best players of all time. And that seems much more likely to happen in San Antonio, albeit with a slightly aging core. At least, as you pointed out in your piece, he gets to play with that next young generational type player, Kawhi Leonard, who had already proved to be a transformative type player, a guy who can continue to grow and develop. Maybe Kawhi takes a step back, but at least he's there forming one of the best wing rotations in NBA history, Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James. That would have been phenomenal. Switching defensively, guarding
Kawhi
fours.
Kawhi could have been the Pippen to his MJ. Like, it is crazy to think about. And just the way this affects, again, the trickle-down effects that this has. Does Durant ever go to Golden State? Golden State isn't able to, they don't win at that level anymore, right? So LeBron and Kawhi, that might beat what the Warriors come back with that next year. I think, and I would, it stands to reason that it would, right? That's an unbelievable duo there. So does it work necessarily for Golden State? Do they trade Klay Thompson, right? Who teams have wanted? Do they try to make a move? Does Durant go there? No, Durant's not going to go there because he's like, I'm in Oklahoma City now. I have no chance against the Spurs and the Warriors. These two teams are loaded. I'm going to Washington. The Eastern Conference is wide open. I'm going home to the Wizards. Because you know who didn't go home? LeBron. Durant gets to keep that narrative going as the anti-LeBron. And he goes home, and he owns that narrative. He goes to the Wizards. With John Wall, Bradley Beal, they destroy the Eastern Conference. And now it's Durant with the Wizards and LeBron with the Spurs in the finals the next year. It's crazy to think about. The Warriors, it doesn't work for them. They trade Klay Thompson for Paul George this last summer.
Oh, I was just getting at that. Does Draymond resign in 2015? I think it was 2015 when he resigned. Does he resign there? Maybe not. He says, oh, you know, there's another opportunity. LeBron has already resigned or signed with San Antonio by that point because he's always the first domino to fall. He goes, oh, I don't want to go up against that LeBron guy in the Western Conference Finals. I'm going to take my money elsewhere. He goes to Detroit. He goes back home to Michigan. He is the one who first goes back home. And all of a sudden, it's a Draymond Green run league. So much could happen.
The fabric of the NBA is so fragile where anything in any other alternate universe could change. You talk about the influence that these big players have. It's just so fun to go down that road. What would happen if they made some other kind of decision, if a shot doesn't fall that did? It's amazing to think about, and that's why we did the Butterfly Effect pieces for the Step Back. We encourage everybody listening, go to the Step Back, check them out from last week. There's so many good ones. Another personal favorite of mine is what if Jason Kidd had actually gone in San Antonio?
Oh, yeah.
That was a really interesting one, and that was kind of far back there. So that, I can't even imagine. If you wanted to take the Ripple Effects all the way to this last summer, I'm sure there could have been.
There was another good one about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yes.
Drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks because of a flip of the coin. You know, the Phoenix could have wound up with the top pick in the draft and taken Lou Alcindor out of UCLA. Instead, he goes to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee wins a championship, and they're able to become one of the top teams in the league over those early 70s era because of Kareem and Oscar Robertson.
I mean, the idea that the lottery determines who drafts who order is just the NBA is so... It's just so funny in that way that luck really does play a part. And like in both of our scenarios, Durant doesn't end up on the Warriors, right? Certain things had to happen for that to happen.
And conversely, we both had LeBron going to San Antonio too.
Right. Is LeBron not playing on San Antonio the least realistic or the weird alternative dimension thing that happened here? Like, was LeBron indeed destined to play for the Spurs at some point? And just like this weird glitch in the matrix and put him in Cleveland?
We saw the reason he comes to Miami in the first place is because of his strong friendship with Dwayne Wade and the potential for a championship.
Right.
He went back to Cleveland because that potential had been realized and the friendship was enough to be sustained without playing together and because Wade was already struggling as a player. And we've continued to see that degradation over the past few years. So for him, then, the issue is, does he have to go back to Cleveland right away? No, that option is still available to him the way we thought it was going to be. Yeah, we always thought he was going to go back to Cleveland towards the tail end of his career, the last year or two or something like that. We didn't think it was going to happen in 2014. In this case, though, he has to continue winning. And let's be honest, San Antonio is the team that keeps winning. 21 straight seasons of 50-plus wins. I mean,
LeBron could have went to Cleveland when Kyrie, Waiters, and Wiggins were all hitting their prime in, 2018.
Right.
So
it would have been awesome to see.
We're by no means right in any of this. This is just David and I's best guess. We'd love to hear your best guesses. You can email us, lockedonheat@gmail.com, how you think things would have shook out. If you think LeBron would have... Give me a reason why you think LeBron would have stayed in Miami past the 2014-15 season. Because I tried to figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. But so David and I are going to talk a little bit off topic coming up. But first, we're asking our listeners to help us out. A new season means we need a new intro song. We wanted to give the musicians out there a chance to have their work featured on the show. You can email your submissions to lockedonheat@gmail.com. We'll be taking them for the rest of the month, so just a few more days here. And then after, we'll choose one to be our new jingle for the season, and we'll give the artist a shout-out on each episode. There's no rules. You could be as creative as you want. Lyrics, you could do a beat only, whatever you want. You can send submissions to lockedonheat@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing your work. I've already got a bunch of submissions. We're still taking them now for about a week.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
So, okay. David, should we talk about Game of Thrones? Do our listeners want to hear about this?
Well, I mean, they should probably shut off now. I get the feeling they're not going to listen to this part if they want to avoid spoilers.
Yeah, because so if you want to avoid spoilers, just shut the podcast off now.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. Thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribed, blah, blah, blah. But that's all our heat talk. The heat talk is done. We'll be back with more heat talk later this week. But with the Game of Thrones finale, David and I are both avid watchers of the show. And we just, look, we got a podcast. We're going to talk about it because we have the opportunity. So,
because again, it's our podcast.
Spoiler, giant spoiler alert. Bonus Game of Thrones talk if you want it. If not, thank you for listening. Have a great night.
Have you read the books?
I have not read the books. Have you read the books?
I am reading the first one right now.
Okay.
And it's very interesting. It's very consistent with the first season so far. Not necessarily in later, from what I've been told by a friend of mine who has read them both, all the books twice, things start to change pretty drastically as the TV seasons progress. But okay. Anyway, we're here talking about season 7, the finale of which was last night. Spectacular in many ways, so much going on, and of course, well, zombie. Well,
can I backtrack for a second?
Absolutely.
All right. We haven't talked at all too much, unless, you know, outside of just personal conversations. What was your take on what was your reaction to the season in general? We're obviously off book right now, right? This is Benioff and Weiss independently running the show and telling the story that they want to tell. What has been your opinion on the season so far? Because there's been a lot of critiques on this season.
You know, I understand what everybody's talking about, that early in the TV show, you get a lot of intrigue, a lot of building of characters, etc. And a lot of that's because the books had fleshed out these characters and these personalities so completely to such detail that it was easy to kind of reproduce them in the show itself. And so this season kind of has strayed from that a little bit. But I can't help but still feel like the show has been hella fun. I mean, like, I'm still enjoying the heck out of it. And part of that is because, well, goddammit, it's a show about, you know, dragons and Westeros and all sorts of fictional things. And if you can't suspend belief for something as cool as that, then I don't know what you can't. Like, I've lost interest in The Walking Dead. I'm one of those people.
Oh, yeah.
To me, the half season break trying to keep up with these myriad storylines, it hasn't worked for me. I like being able to watch week to week what's happening in Game of Thrones, and you know, the fact that it's only 7 episodes this season I think has been a big boon for them. I think it has people a lot more emotionally invested, and I still like this season. Do you not like this season?
I loved the season up until Jaime didn't die when he charged at a freaking dragon. Like, to me, that's when things started to get off the rails a little bit.
Sure.
The season made enough sense. Were they moving really fast through the script, through the storyline? Yes. Were armies seemingly transporting from one place to another because they needed to speed along? You know, we didn't have the chance to watch, you know, Tyrion, you know, sail to another island for 3 episodes, right? Like that. That was the stuff that used to happen that doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
Now, Tyrion sets sail in one scene, and 2 scenes later, he's at his destination. And that's fine. Look, we're wrapping the thing up. We get it. We've seen enough of those sailing scenes that we understand what happens in those kind of situations. I'm fine with that. But I didn't like the stuff that just stopped making sense. For example, when Jaime charges at a dragon who breathes fire at him, Bronn somehow turns into Usain Bolt and saves him off of his horse, and they go plummet into a lake that is as deep as an ocean, and then somehow come out on the other side by the next episode. And
that is a good point.
It was like, Danny sees this happen, and they don't chase after him and finish the job. Like, you just let those dudes swim away. That never made sense to me.
Well, she wasn't really looking. Remember, she was kind of paying attention to Dragon's wound at this point because he had been hit by the giant spear, Meister Kyber's, you know, giant spear. hits him in the shoulder. So Danny dismounts the dragon, is kind of like, oh, are you going to be okay? And then the dragon sees this knight aboard a white horse running full speed and goes, wait a minute, that doesn't seem cool at all.
Do you think George R.R. Martin would have pulled the trigger on Jamie right there? Like, that was dumb. Don't charge at a dragon. You're stupid. You're dead.
It does seem unlikely that he would have charged at a dragon, considering the moment preceding that, doesn't he look around the battlefield and be like, holy crap, there's no way we're going to win this. Not just this battle, this war is lost because they've got dragons.
He's always been sensible, right? In combat. Like, that's a really good point. I don't think Jamie would charge at that dragon. But that seemed out of character for him.
His rationale was, I can kill Daenerys and it's going to end the war. You know, like these dragons are just going to be like without a mother and they're just going to go off peacefully somewhere. Some dragon land and just like make babies, I guess, and not interfere with what's going on in the Seven Kingdoms.
None of that stuff made sense to me. That's where the things really started to come off the rails. I hated the mission to go north of the wall to find a zombie or a White Walker.
But it was so cool, though.
Was it, though?
It was, to me. That group back to back in a circle fighting back armies of the dead. And
it was
plus,
a little too comic booky for me.
Well, I'm a huge comic book.
I know.
So, it was that aerial shot of seeing them all back to back. Well, it was absolutely forced because without that happening, there wouldn't be a dead third dragon that gets resurrected into a zombie dragon.
That was my problem. That whole mission was basically to get
set it up.
To set up the Night King getting a dragon, right? So that eventually they can break through the wall. That was the whole thing, and it was sloppily done. I just thought it was. There was other. I don't look. I'm not responsible for writing the show. I didn't write any of the books. It's not my job to figure out. But I just thought it was they were in a room. They were like, "Well, Danny's like, I want to burn King's Landing to the ground." Tyrion's like, "Probably shouldn't do that." And she was like, "All right, fine. What's your best idea?" And he was like, "Well, why don't we just bring her a zombie instead?" And everybody was like, okay, yeah, that sounds good. I'm like, okay, can we hear any other options before all of the best warriors we have go north of the wall and try to figure out how to bring back a White Walker by himself?
Some of the finest minds of their generation.
And then take it to Cersei, who wants to murder all of us. I think the better option was just burn King's Landing to the ground. You don't need them. You've already destroyed half of the army anyway.
That's why Tyrion... No one suffered greater losses this season than Tyrion, I think, in the sense that he keeps making bad decisions. None of them have turned out well. He's trying to counsel Daenerys into being a better, kindler version of a queen or a Targaryen, and it's just not working very well. Like you said, maybe she should have just gone on there and been like everybody else and just roasted King's Landing to the ground, and that probably would have been much more effective. She certainly wouldn't have lost the third dragon, that's for sure.
So the finale last night, right? It was a great finale. I'll say this. If you can kind of just forget how the sausage was made and see that giant dragon blowing up the wall. All right. Big ice dragon blowing up the wall. That was cool.
Yes.
And that's White Walkers marching
totally spoiled
south.
It for our listener.
What?
We totally spoiled it for our listeners because that's the final scene of the show.
Well, we gave a giant spoiler alert at the beginning of this conversation 10 minutes ago.
Hey, I'm just pointing that out to everybody.
Well, if they were listening, they ignored the spoiler alert, and that's, that's going into a no trespassing zone. You enter at your own risk.
There you go.
So, I did have one problem with the finale. Two problems with the finale. I missed the part where Sansa and Arya all of a sudden decided that they're going to be master colluders against Littlefinger. I thought that they hated each other. I don't understand at which point. Was it before or after Sansa found the faces that Arya had in her messenger bag? Because
clearly it was afterwards.
Right, yeah.
And you figure her trust would have been, and realistically, her trust would have been broken at seeing her little sister collecting people's faces so she can become a master assassin.
We completely skipped the part where they were like, oh wait, no, we both don't want Littlefinger to do what he's doing for like the last six seasons. Let's murder him. When was that plan? When did they get on this? I was completely shocked. Was it cool to see? Yes. That was awesome when Arya just like slit his throat like that. That was like a cool scene. It was cool for Sansa to just be the decent. Lady of the North and yeah. smart finally. And I like smart. Her line where she was like, I admit that I'm a slow learner, but I do learn. And I was like, all right, cool. Self-awareness. That's good. But I just missed the part where like that plan happened. I thought we could, for all the lousy Arya Sansa scenes we got, I would have liked to see this. I would have liked to see the scene where they got on the same page is all I'm saying.
Yeah. You figure they would have talked about it. Like, okay, you're kind of a psycho now. It turns out that you've, you know, in the past couple of years gone on to become a master assassin, whatever. I guess I can kind of overlook that because you are my sister, although realistically we've never really quite gone along, right. But that's okay. You know, you're still my sister. We're blood, you know, we're the children of Ned Stark, and I can overlook the fact that you're a face collecting assassin. In the meantime, you're kind of questioning my allegiance because, well, I have always been somewhat power hungry. I was looking forward to being the queen, even if it meant marrying a sociopathic Joffrey. But at the same time, you know, I think you can get past that and we can kind of figure out how to, you know, look at other potential issues that might arise. And in this case, it just happens to be one Lord Peter Baelish. You know, you've been spying on him. He's been giving me bad advice to kind of tear us apart. Let's just kind of get past that and let's just take him out of the equation because clearly he's the problem, not you, not me, it's him.
And so I get that there was like the shock factor, right, which is what you wanted for the audience. It just felt cheap, you know? Like the Red Wedding, there was a shock factor there, but it wasn't cheap because there were so many steps to get everybody in that
yeah.
room, right?
Yeah. He knew that Walder Frey was upset. He kind of questioned. Yeah. Like I rewatched these episodes recently and it was just – like, he kept hinting at the fact that, look, you kind of screwed me over by not marrying one of my bazillion daughters. You promised that you would. You kind of overlooked me the whole time. But that's fine. Whatever. No problem. I assure you can have your wedding here. I'd be happy to host it. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right. There were so many things that, I mean, talk about butterfly effects earlier. Things that went into play to get there. This was a left turn, but not in a good way, right? It was the Peter Baelish thing. Like, there was no groundwork laid for that. The groundwork was laid for Sansa to get murdered by Arya, if anything, right? Or vice versa.
Yeah, I was wondering. Oh, yeah, exactly. I was wondering how she was going to have Arya killed, knowing that Arya is as slippery and as smart as she is, as lethal as she's become. I was wondering how they were going to actually go about having her killed. And it was interesting how they would just had her walk into this chamber filled with all these bannermen of the North.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, finally, that's a big enough group to actually have Arya killed. If this is the way to do it, that makes sense. And then all of a sudden they go, nope, we're actually here to watch, you know, Baelish Littlefinger bleed all over the Winterfell floor.
I'll say this, great showmanship by Sansa. Great showmanship. And she's like, how do you answer to your charges? Peter Baelish, and he snaps. He's like, wait, what? Me? Wait, hold on. What? It was like, great, good
yeah,
show.
He's like
Sansa.
Smirking
good job.
Off in the corner there. Right. He's like, yeah, I finally
like
did it.
Daydreaming. He's like, what am I gonna have for dinner? Nothing, dude. You're gonna be dead by dinner. So that was a whole ends justify the means thing though, right? Because you got the scene that you wanted. Everybody wanted Littlefinger dead, and he died. It was just it was kind of messy how they got there, and not really in a good way, and just in a way that just left me confused and have more questions than answers after. And the other thing I had a problem with, and I haven't seen, I'm curious to see where you stand on this.
Okay.
Just like the information dump by Bran when Sam just walks into the room. Like, Bran has said four words the whole season, and all of a sudden now he needs to get stuff off of his chest? I had an issue with that. Like, Bran's just sitting there by the fire, being weird Third Eye Raven dude that he is.
Right.
Sam walks in, he's like, hey, we met each other once before. Of course I remember you. I'm the Three-Eye Raven. Sam's like, I don't, whatever.
Right, so I don't know what that means.
Right, which was great comedic relief there, but he was like, yeah, I'm just here to see John. And he was like, oh, speaking of John, here's everything I know about John.
And right. It's just because of my time traveling and the fact that I've been able to see everything. I know all about it.
Right. It was just like, that's all it took? We've been yelling at the television for six episodes now. Bran knows everything. Just ask him something. Nobody asks him anything. And all of a sudden he just news dumps on this guy that just got to Winterfell.
And he sure as hell doesn't volunteer or anything. And that's another thing is that why doesn't Bran mention to everybody that he knows all this about Jon? Like, why was he waiting for Sam.
Right, he has to be the guy to reveal to. He kept saying he has to know. I'm like, you've had six episodes since you got here in the first episode.
Yeah, send him a raven.
He was
dude.
Here with you for the first three episodes, and then he left.
Now here's the other thing though. Like he mentions to Sam that John is the rightful son of Lyanna Stark and I forgot what his name is. Rhaegar Targaryen.
Rhaegar Targaryen. Yeah.
Yeah. So he is the son of Rhaegar Targaryen.
Or Rhaegar, as Jilly says.
Rhaegar or whatever. And then somehow Sam, although he had completely overlooked this possibility when Gilly read it to him in episode one or two, the fact that the Targaryen and Stark had been legally wed.
Right.
Now all of a sudden it clicks into place.
Right. He remembers all of it. I'm like, dude, you were ignoring her.
Oh yeah, that annulment thing she mentioned 5 weeks ago. I totally still remember it. Yes, they were annulled. The wedding was annulled, and that was actually a legal wedding. It makes total sense that Jon is now the legal heir of the Iron Throne.
They just put it all together right there. And it was
the pieces all fit.
I get
simultaneous.
And you ever watch like the after the episode thing with the interviews with the Benioff and Weiss?
I do not.
So they said afterwards that the reason they did it that way is so that they can have Bran narrate over Jon and Dany finally, you know,
consummating their affection,
consummating
for
the we dig each other relationship. And it just seems that every decision they made was with this end scene in mind. Like, I get the effect of having Bran saying that those guys are related while they're, you know, doing the dirty.
Sure.
I get it. But it was for effect. It was sloppily done to get there. All of a sudden, Bran just news dumps all over Sam. Right. I was like, whoa. That was a lot of information and completely uncalled for in a regular conversation. It just, none of
maybe,
it made sense.
One of the things I've always understood about TV and film in general, especially here in the United States, is that you can never underestimate the stupidity of the American audience. And that's just the reality, is that a lot of people like a lot of dumb things. And I think when you're looking at this show, that's going back to something that Bran saw as the Three-Eyed Raven in season three, when he was kind of looking over Lyanna Stark's death and the fact that she informed Ned, or young Ned, that it was actually the son of Rhaegar Targaryen.
Was that season three? I feel like it was a little bit later than that.
I think it was like early on season three, when he's first starting to become the Three-Eyed Raven.
What season are we in now?
Season seven?
Yeah, that had to be. I think that was like last season.
No, it wasn't. It may have been season four, if anything, but it was still 3 years ago. Either way, and so I don't think a lot of people watching the show. Now that's the thing, though, is like you kind of have to dumb it down and you have to narrate.
But that's
everything.
What I loved about Game of Thrones is there was a highbrow way to watch it. There was a highbrow way to watch, and there was a lowbrow way to watch. Like if you were lowbrow, you just watched for the nudity and the dragons. I'm fine with that. Like you could just watch it that way. But then there was the highbrow way for like the book readers and stuff, and they did such a good job walking that line. And I just, now that they're completely off book, I feel like they really just dumbed it down, right? There really isn't a highbrow way to watch the show anymore. It's everybody's on the same playing field, and I didn't like that.
Yeah, I know it's tough. I mean, they've kind of taken a little bit of a step back there, and I'm wondering. And I've heard, I believe that there's one more season left,
yes.
And that's it. Right?
That's okay. It. Yeah, and I think it's going to be a similar seven episode thing, and that's going to be it. So, I mean, either way, at the end of the day, it's still a great show, and I'm going to watch every episode of it, and when it's all done, I'm probably going to go back and binge watch all of them at some point, but...
Yes,
The weird thing is, when you do binge watch all of them, this final season is going to feel so much different, just as the pace and the way it's written and the way the story is told, than, like, the first few seasons, you know? The season does just feel different, and it's not as good, but at the same time... We're going to get the things that we want. What's your prediction for who ends up on the throne and kind of how all of it plays out?
Well, I mean, it's starting to work out more and more that that clearly Jon is meant to hold the throne. So I wonder if he'll sit alongside Dany. Will Dany die? That seems likely to me. I think she's going to die.
I think the opposite.
Really?
I think Jon's going to die, but he's going to sacrifice himself for Dany. I think... He's never felt deserving of living in the first place, and he's always said things like, I didn't want to be king, I just kind of, they made me do it. sort of thing. I think he's just going to be like, look, I survived death once. I got a second shot of life that I never really deserved. I feel guilty about in the first place. Danny wants to be on the throne. I don't. I love her. I'm going to just, here, I'll off myself. For whatever reason, I'm not sure why it's going to happen. And that's what I think. I don't know. That's just my...
Have to stay tuned.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for... If you've listened this far, thank you for dealing with our Game of Thrones conversation. Let us know what you thought. And thank you for listening. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at lockedonheat. Send us some mailbag questions. We'll try to get to a mailbag later in the week. Go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.